Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 12, Text 49. Mrisha girastahi asati asat katha. Natasati yat palavana rukshaja. Kadeva sachan charhaiva mangalam. Tareva punyam bhagavat punodayam. Mrisha, false ego. Gira, words. Ta, they. He, indeed. Asati, untrue. Asatkata, useless discussions of that which is not eternal. Nakatyate is not discussed. Yet, wherein? Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Adokshaja, the transcendental Lord. Tat, that. Eva, alone. Satyam, true. Tat, that. Uha, indeed. Eva, alone. Mangalam, auspicious. Tat, that. Eva, alone. Punyam, pious. Bhagavad Guna, the qualities of the Supreme Personality. Udayam, which manifests. Translation. Words that do not describe the transcendental personality of Godhead but instead deal with temporary matters are simply false and useless. Only those words that manifest the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord are actually truthful, auspicious, and pious. Translation responsibly. Words that do not describe the transcendental personality of Godhead, but instead deal with temporary matters, are simply false and useless. Only those words that manifest the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord are actually truthful, auspicious, and pious. Purport by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. Sooner or later, all material literature and discussions must fail the test of time. On the other hand, the transcendental descriptions of the Supreme Lord can free us from the bondage of illusion and restore us to our eternal status as loving servants of the Lord. Although men who are like animals may criticize the glorification of the Absolute Truth, those who are civilized should go on vigorously propagating the transcendental glories of the Lord. Shri Chaitanya Manavisham Satitamyena Bhutale Swayam Prakadamayam Paradisha Parantikam Mukam Karoti Vachram Tangum Langayate Girim Yakripa Talaham Vande Shri Gurun Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpa Trivascha Kripa Sindhivya Evacha Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, at the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the previous chapters, we've been hearing the examples of what has been discussed throughout the first canto, second canto, third canto, and so on. And The purports have been explaining, of course, the transcendental qualities and the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everything has been discussed from creation to sub-creation, time, so many different factors. Krishna's winding up his pastimes, his earthly pastimes, the annihilation of his dynasty, etc. So all these have been discussed already, but as we look at this 12th canto and we go back to the first canto right to the beginning, we see how these questions that were asked by the great sages at the forest of Lamaisharanya have really been explained in depth by Srila Sukha Goswami, whom they were asking the questions to. So we finish the Bhagavatam, and by reading gradually the Bhagavatam, we're enthused more to go back to the Bhagavatam and read it again. This is what I found when I finished reading the 12th canto. I found it reminded me of the beginning of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because those questions that were asked were being answered, and that once again I wanted to hear exactly how that Bhagavatam was revealed for Kali Yuga. So this is the transcendental nature of hearing about Krishna's pastimes, that you hear and you also want to hear some more. You finish and you want to hear more about Krishna. So this is why Krishna is known as Uttama Shloka, that his transcendental qualities and pastimes, they are not meant for nescience, they're not meant for one who is trying to create a comfortable position in the material world, but they're actually meant to create a transcendental consciousness within the reader of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So right at the beginning, this translation is speaking about how anything that is not dealing with the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is simply false and useless. So it's the very, once again, Srimad Bhagavatam is kind of cutting edge. It is very spotless, and it is explaining in depth, and it is not trying to make any room for speculation, nor is it trying to, in a soft way, try to make us understand how the material nature is working or how false it is, etc. But it is giving us the fact that actually anything that does not give us realization, transcendental knowledge about the Supreme Lord is useless, because it's not going to get us out of the grips of consistent birth and death over and over again. Hence, this translation is explaining that these are just temporary matters that are not going to fulfill the desire of the spirit soul. We understand that yoga means to unite or to link with that Supreme Person. Therefore, topics about him are specifically constructed for that purpose, but otherwise, other topics, they're not actually going to give us transcendental knowledge. So why should we waste time trying to absorb and make some other knowledge the goal of life? Not to say that we do not, you know how to operate a computer, or you don't know how to drive a car, you know, because it's not dealing with Krishna, it's not giving you transcendental realization about Krishna, etc. But we should be intelligent to know what to base our foundation on, what to take, where to take guidance, where we should have our checks and balances. So our checks and balances are coming from Shastra. And hence, the Srimad Bhagavatam is this spotless Purana. Right from the beginning, the sages in Lamaisharanya, not only do they glorify Srimad Bhagavatam, but they are also glorifying the personality who is speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam. They glorify Sukadeva Goswami, they glorify Sukadeva Goswami, who is coming in parampara, who is coming in that disciplic succession. So in the beginning, the sages are asking, O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives, they are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. So, before speaking this verse, the sages were asking Srila Sukadeva Goswami, to tell them actually what is the ultimate good for the people in general, because this is what's going to happen. Kali Yuga is going to come and people are just misguided, they're lazy, they're unintelligent, they're always disturbed. So Krishna has left the planet, Krishna has wound up his activities. So where exactly are the religious principles? How can people ascertain what the absolute truth is, what the goal of life is? So how is it possible for the Kali Yuga residents to make progress in spiritual life? So before they do this, of course, they're glorifying Sutta Goswami. They're explaining to us how an acharya or how a spiritual teacher should be free from all vice. So he should be free from the contaminations of the lower modes of material nature. He shouldn't have a cheating propensity. He should be well versed in the Vedic literatures, and he should have ascertained by practical realization what the absolute truth is. So not only do we get given Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna's pastimes, which are very, very nectar, but we're also given guidance as to who an acharya is and how to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and how to assimilate Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is very important, because sometimes you may hear people saying there's this Bhagavatam written by such and such a person, or there's this Bhagavad Gita, it is all, you know, it cannot be contaminated, it is all scripture, so I'll just read from this and that. But Srila Prabhupada is explaining that to hear these transcendental subject matters, we should hear in a disciplic succession. So it should be coming from a line that is bona fide. So in the prayers of the sages at Namaisharanya, they're actually explaining how Sutta Goswami was qualified to speak the Bhagavatam, because he heard it from his spiritual master, Sukadev Goswami, who heard it from his spiritual master, and like that, really emphasizing that this knowledge is coming through parampara, therefore it has all potency. Now you can have knowledge, but if it's not coming in disciplic succession, then the tendency is it gets watered down and the potency is not really there. And we know this from Sanskrit, if you remove a single word, even just a vowel or a consonant or anything from a verse, the meaning completely changes. And because as conditioned souls, we have these four tendencies to be illusioned, to cheat, to commit mistakes, to have imperfect senses. So obviously, if we do that, then we're faulty. Our cheating propensity is to claim that we actually have knowledge when we don't. So we want to put across our view, and we tamper with Krishna's complete system of guidance. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, right from the very beginning, is being established by Sutta Goswami, the sages at Namaisharanya, how it should be received in a disciplic succession in parampara. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is Uttama Shloka. It's not meant for nascents, but it's actually meant to elevate the conditioned souls out of the pool of material existence into the spiritual kingdom. And the analogy is used by Srila Prabhupada, or actually by the sages themselves. They were saying that Sutta Goswami is like the captain of of a boat, and that there, by his narration of the Bhagavatam, not only themselves but everyone else in Kali Yuga can take shelter of that boat and actually ride across the ocean of material suffering. So this is the system that the Bhagavad Purana, the spotless Purana, is giving. Further than that, we can understand that to actually hear Srimad Bhagavatam, to hear the pastimes of Krishna, requires qualification. Because these pastimes, they're not fiction, it's not a myth, it's not fairy tale. It's not like hearing about Rapunzel or hearing about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or whatever. It's not play stuff. It's not kindergarten. This is dealing with, you know, the absolute truth. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is beyond mundane, static information. So the Srila Prabhupada makes this point in the first canto, that in line with how Srimad Bhagavatam is beyond all material speculation and shortcomings, there's a comparison between material knowledge and spiritual knowledge, how material knowledge just keeps one under the modes of material nature, and how this knowledge is very dry and static, whereas transcendental knowledge is vibrant, it's dynamic, right? It's pleasing to the heart, it's pleasing to the ear. And it's the first line, it's very interesting to always read the first line of each purport that Srila Prabhupada describes. The first line of the purport, Prabhupada says, sooner or later all material literature and discussions must fail the test of time. But so material knowledge, material discussion, which is this temporary sense gratification, over time turns sour, because that's the nature of things that are presented or things that are done in the mode of passion and ignorance. Through time, they just become dry and stale. And that is experience, that in the beginning we think that it is actually nectar, but it's actually very poisonous. This here in this mundane literature is very poisonous. It is very foolish and it keeps us in an illusion. And Srila Prabhupada gives this analogy of how material life is compared to a cinema house. A cinema, you know, where people watch movies? So people go to cinemas and there's a movie about whatever, or a documentary. Sometimes people feel very proud watching documentaries and happy because, you know, it's a documentary, it's about the betterment of, you know, the world, etc., etc. And we watch these movies, we go into a cinema with an anticipation, you know, to hear something exciting, to get excited or to get some knowledge. So you go in there and basically for 2 hours or more, depending on what you watch, it's basically an illusion, because it's actually not real. It's just created to arouse our sense perception and feel good for that specific time, and then we walk away. That was a great movie. But how that actually influences our life, it doesn't. So we can go and watch a movie about someone who, you know, rags to riches. You know, someone started off very poor and now they've made it, you know, it's possible. But then it ends there. How that personally influences our spiritual life, it doesn't really. It will make us sad, it will make us emotional. Oh, this person in this movie, you know, died of cancer or did something, we feel bad. Oh, that was really horrific. Or you watch a horror movie and then you're feeling, you know, enticed in different ways. But that doesn't really do anything for one's advancement in one's yoga, in one's union with Krishna. So material existence is all an illusion. We're thinking, oh, this for now is comfortable, it makes me feel good, it's exciting, it's adventurous. And over time, you know, it's just an illusion. It's coming and it's going. Now, this is material existence. This is material knowledge. This is what it does for us. For some time, it looks good and it's exciting and it's adventurous. But then over time, you know, matter, over time goes through some changes and it loses its taste. It loses its flavor. And because we're eternal, we always want to relish pleasure. Therefore, we will go somewhere else and try and find some more nectar. So we'll chew the chewed and try to remain comfortable in a situation and then get frustrated, then go somewhere else. It's like a cow goes here, chews grass, walks over there, chews grass, and then gets lost somewhere else, chews grass. So material existence is a parade. Okay, now there's green grass, and then there's dry grass, wet grass. It's all enjoyment. I'm going here, I'm going there, I'm going to enjoy my grass. So material knowledge, you know, there's this bestseller book written by such and such person. I'm going to read that, and that's great. And then 3 weeks later, there's another book. You read it, empower yourself. That's great. And then after that, something is always coming. This is the nature of material existence. Whether it comes through knowledge, whether it comes through habits, whether it comes through arts, culture, etc. This is the nature. It keeps coming. The material energy creates this little opulence around sense gratification. It's very colorful. It's very thick and juicy. Right? It looks really fresh from the outside. and then you experience it and it's not exactly what you expected, and then it passes by, it's like a float in the Mumbai parade. We have your Hare Krishnas with the banner chanting, and then we pass in front of the council, and then someone also passes, and then another float, and another float, and another float. And this is the material world. Like, okay, you can have this enjoyment, okay, it wears off, then next, it wears off, next, it wears off. This literature, that literature, this music, that art, this cinema, it's all the same. So the material energy creates all these opulences, creates all, because it's the Shakti of Krishna, of course. It gets this potency from Krishna's internal potency, as we read in the previous chapter. So it's Krishna's opulence, potency to bewilder the conditioned souls who want to be in forgetfulness. So this is the problem with material knowledge, that it has this opulence, it has this excitement, but, you know, spiritual knowledge or transcendental knowledge about Krishna has special features of being such chit and ananda, full of knowledge, eternality and bliss. So you get in touch with that, then you also revive those qualities that are actually dormant within the living entity. So it's kind of like, you know, what the camel does. The camel wants to enjoy its chewing thorns, and it's enjoying the taste of its own blood, thinking that actually this is nectar. The camel doesn't actually know that actually your so-called enjoyment is causing your suffering, and that suffering is seen as enjoyment. So Prabhupada is stressing when he speaks about this mundane knowledge, he gives his famous example of how the universities are like slaughterhouses. Because what happens there? You have young people or old, whatever, being sent to these institutions, and they're being told to forget about the actual goal of life, because you will not get a department teaching self-realization in university. And Srila Prabhupada explained that this is like a slaughterhouse, because at the end of the life we don't have any realization of who we are. So we're being sent somewhere just to further put us into ignorance of our eternal relationship with Krishna. So the slaughterhouse, animals are sent there to be killed, to be put into ignorance. So we go to universities, we're learning everything else but Krishna. We're learning everything else but transcendental knowledge. Now this is material sound. It is full of opulence, beauty and knowledge. Right? It all looks opulent, it looks beautiful, you know, highly scientific, we're creating this, we're creating that, we've produced this, we've produced that. But it can never surpass knowledge, transcendental knowledge about Krishna, which is such chit and ananda. So although sometimes we may hear this, but still it doesn't sink in because we have a conditioned nature. But it should be established. Prabhupada said, all material knowledge will fail the test of time. It's just a matter of time till it all collapses again. And because history repeats itself, it's a blessing. Maybe the next time around we can learn something from history. Don't do it again. But the fact that we keep doing it again just goes to show how much contamination is in the conditioned soul. Because there's no scope for inquiry, and this is what separates one person, this is what separates others from being civilized and uncivilized. As Prabhupada's sermons are mentioning in this chapter, that those who are civilized will actually teach this transcendental knowledge. Civilized personalities will vigorously teach this transcendental knowledge, because it is not being taught in many other so-called civilized classes or schools. So we're not being fanatic, nor are we being blaspheming any other type of knowledge or philosophy. But the fact of the matter is, anything that is not explaining or glorifying the transcendental attributes of Krishna, it's a futile attempt. Because the goal of life is to actually understand who Krishna is and what our relationship is. But just that is the futile attempt to try and, you know, run towards a mirage in a desert. Or if we try and quench one drop of water in a desert, it is, what's the point? It is, it's just temporary, nothing will come out of it. The material existence, there is no point to trying to make a comfortable position in the material world. It is not meant to be comfortable. The only position that we should be aspiring for is a position at Krishna's lotus feet. And it doesn't mean that we all huddle onto the altar, we all go and grab Shri Radha-Vallabha's lotus feet. It means that we accept Krishna on our heads as our Supreme Lord and Master. And that everything is coming from Him. As He's explained, everything is resting on Him just like pearls are strung on a thread. If you try and take Krishna out, your entire existence is just a confusion. Just as with your neck beads. They break, what happened? You know, Tulsi is just everywhere. But if we remove the base of everything from our existence, then our entire life is just shambles. There's no foundation, there's no consistency, there's no, what's the word in English? There's no substance to our life because we're not connected to the Supreme Whole. So this point is made by the servants of Srila Prabhupada that actually this material knowledge or material literature at some point is just going to, through time, and Krishna explains that He is time. Krishna battles and He bewilders through His time potency. He shows that actually this is a futile attempt. You cannot know Me unless you accept Me as the Supreme Personality. No matter how materially intelligent you may be, Krishna says He will not remove the veil of ignorance unless you surrender unto Him. So unless we surrender unto Krishna, we can't even understand the cosmos, how everything is arranged. And you see how we have so many scientists explaining it may be like this, it may be like that, hypothesizing. Right? They're thinking maybe this happened and maybe that happened. Who knows, maybe it didn't. And half the time it wasn't like that. So they're speculating, using mental power, using material intelligence, trying to understand, but we will not get to the crux of the matter because we're not seeing Krishna in the equation. We've removed Krishna from the equation. So if you remove Krishna from the equation, you cannot solve anything. If you separate Krishna from existence, even in this material world, has potency, this material world has value because Krishna is here. But it's Krishna's energy. From the creation, we understand that, you know, the Mahatattva is there, the Pradhan is there, all the elements are there in their gross and subtle form, and they're just waiting for the Lord to cast His glance, and then everything is injected into material nature. Otherwise, nothing will happen. So that is Krishna, that's the Krishna factor. Even for material creation, we depend on Krishna. So one who understands these attributes, it's not that we just speak about Krishna dancing or, you know, having his, you know, childlike pastimes. But in this verse, Janma Kama Chame Divyam Evam Yuvati Tatpataha, it doesn't mean that we only understand Krishna in terms of His very sweet rasas or pastimes. But included in that is understanding Krishna's, you know, potencies. But how Krishna can expand Himself. He's in every universe. He's in everyone's heart. He's guiding everyone as the Super Soul. That should further convince the living entity that, yes, there's no person who can be able to perform such acts and still have his transcendental pastime with his loving devotees. So it's only Krishna. So the literature that explains that, that explains creation, not only material, but that explains how everything is sustained. That is what we should actually be chasing. And how to do that? The sages are giving us examples about how to actually hear properly. Because we might have access to this knowledge, but to actually make the best out of it, we have to approach it with a certain mentality. So we have to be sincere and eager to hear about Krishna. Not just come and physically be there, but mentally be somewhere else. No, we have to be sincere and we have to be eager in our attempts to hear about Krishna. Every opportunity we have, we should be cultivating a hearing mentality. Let's hear Srimad Bhagavatam, let's hear Bhagavad Gita, let's hear this class. And that sustains us. Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. Without Shravanam Kirtanam, there cannot be any Vishnu Smaranam at all. If we're not hearing and chanting, how can we think about Krishna? As Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, when he's explaining the different ways that knowledge is received, when he's explaining how Shravanam and Kirtanam is at the beginning and it's at the end in our devotional service. So it's sustaining each and every single activity that we're performing. To the degree that we hear and chant, we serve Krishna in a specific way, in a specific mood. So we have to qualify ourselves to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and topics about Krishna by developing a mood of sincerity and intense eagerness to hear. Even in our hearing propensity, there's a certain mood. It's a very subtle point, but there's a certain mood when we hear. We should, just as Arjuna is showing by his example, that we have to be submissive when we hear. If you're not submissive, then it implies that we're not humble, and that lack of humility means that we're not willing to accept that we actually don't know. We actually think that we have knowledge. So if we're not submissive, if we don't want to read about Krishna, if we don't want to understand Krishna, yes, I know everything, or I've heard about Krishna, I read Mahabharata and Ramayana, or I've done a Bhakti Shastri course before, so that goes the end of me touching Bhagavad Gita. So that means, you know, we're not really submissive because we don't want to hear from Krishna over and over again, who's explaining himself. So this submissive, we have to learn this art of submissive hearing. It's not that we just question everything in a very negative way. Why is it always saying, you know, women are less intelligent? Right, that you get all the time. Oh, your books are saying that the women are less intelligent, they're like children, da 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 da. And this is, we get this all the time, and then you have to explain what Srila Prabhupada exactly means by that. Unless you're studying the books, you won't understand what that point means. And we can misguide others. So you question, what exactly does it mean? Not like, how dare you say that we women are less intelligent and, you know, we have the same amount of brains and etc., etc. All these different arguments that get, you know, pushed forward. No, but we can submissively ask, you know, I fail to understand, what does it exactly mean women are like children? Can you explain to me? And you have to be willing to actually accept, because some things in the Bhagavatam we don't want to accept because our self-ego is still so huge that the Bhagavatam says this and we're like, I don't agree, because our false ego is reacting. Actually, half the time when we're interacting with personalities, when we're interacting with, sometimes with reading, and we get this painful feeling, it's like, oh, this is painful, how can they say it? It's actually the false ego. Because the soul understands this knowledge. The soul cannot get hurt by the words coming from Krishna, the all-loving personality. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is even sweeter, it's coming from Sukadeva Goswami, of course. And it's explaining the pastimes of Krishna. So when we read Srimad Bhagavatam sometimes, and or any other scripture, we're hearing about Krishna, and we don't agree, or we want to fight Krishna with his words, we're doomed to failure, because you know you can't defeat Krishna. And Krishna is explaining, because he's created us. He knows how bodies function. He knows how, you know, this person works. He knows how, you know, the psychology of a man, the psychology of a woman. You know, Krishna is a psychologist. He knows how to deal with each and every single living entity and each, you know, living entity in different species of life. So the reason why, you know, this Srimad Bhagavatam is so spotless, it's explaining so many different things. It's not that just Krishna is God, Almighty, All Powerful, and, you know, Rasa Leela, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, dance, dance, dance. But it's also explaining, you know, the subtle workings of, you know, our conditioning, how to break that conditioning. And one other very important point that I've found, actually, because at the end of this purport, which is a very six-line purport, the servants of Srila Prabhupada are stressing that those who are civilized should vigorously propagate the transcendental joys of Krishna. There's one purport here. Prabhupada is explaining the process of hearing. And what he says in there I've found to be quite interesting, especially for some of us who are trying to preach. This is text 6 in the first chapter of the first canto. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the acharya or the Goswami must be well acquainted with all these literatures. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. So Prabhupada says, to hear and explain is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. So it's one thing, we're hearing, which is, we're reading Prabhupada's books, which is really nice, and really following Srila Prabhupada's instructions. But further than that, Srila Prabhupada always wanted that we spread Krishna consciousness. So that means we try and absorb what we hear. We hear as much as we can, and then we repeat it. So we have to give Krishna. We have to preach somehow or the other. And this point, Prabhupada also always used to say that everyone should, you know, you should become spiritual master and also preach. Not that everyone, you know, goes and outside looks for a dandan, I'm a spiritual master, and you have to be in saffron, etc. But the mood, the mentality is that we're free from the Kali Yuga vices, and we become Goswamis. We follow the regulative principles very strictly, and we take this message of Lord Chaitanya, and we propagate it through Shravanam Kirtanam. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. Hearing is called Shravanam and explaining is called Kirtana. So if you really want to become living Bhagavats, if you want to not only understand but also realize this knowledge, put it into practice, then we shouldn't just read, we should also hear and then give that message. This is the potent way of actually worshipping the Srimad Bhagavatam. We take it, assimilate it, digest it, act it out, or show our, you know, transcendental nature of the soul in our activities, and then give it to others. This is what Srila Prabhupada wants. So we're not just reading by ourselves, that we're actually reading it with a desire to understand, to realize it, and then give it to others. That is the greatest wealth. And Krishna says the person who does that is very, very dear to him. Extremely dear to him. One who gives Krishna to others is very dear to Krishna. So if we want to be endearing, as the Bhagavatam is giving us hints, then we should repeat these topics about Krishna and not just mechanically, but really try and absorb and have the proper mentality when hearing, submissiveness, sincerity, and eagerness. And this we do under the guidance of our spiritual master. Otherwise, we'll be attracted to another form of hearing and chanting. As it said in the Bhagavatam, those words that do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, I have considered to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. So if we're not attracted by Krishna, we'll go to these topics that are just, as the text for today says, temporary and useless. So Srimad Bhagavatam is for swan-like personalities. So we want to become pure, and the way to become pure is to read descriptions of the transcendental glorious name and fame and qualities of the Lord. And in that way, the fire of purification within the heart begins, and it dissipates all sinful activities and all ignorance. And then we are reinstated as servants of Krishna, which is our constitutional position eternally. That doesn't change. So I'll stop there, and I'll ask if anyone has a comment or question. Yes, Guru Mantra.
In order to do like a lot of in personal manners, so that the most of the reactions in so how can we practically every day practice this kirtan, except because you know we all have servants and we can't just sing like kirtan. Doing kirtana like every single minute in that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how can we put a kirtana is also preaching, right? The chanting of glories of the Lord. So how can we put that into practice and hearing also? Like, because hearing is easy, you can put on your
Okay. So hearing is very easy, chanting. So what is it that we like doing best, apart from honoring prasadam? What do we like doing? We like chatting, we like talking. So just talk about Krishna, even if it's in the assembly of devotees. That is kirtana. Share whatever it is that you're reading, just share. You're having prasadam or you see a devotee, just, oh, I'm reading this in the Bhagavatam, like sometimes you do with me, you tell me, oh, listen to this, and you share. Because we shouldn't keep Krishna to ourselves. To actually understand Krishna more, we'll understand Krishna more when we start giving him. Krishna will start showing so many different things. So in our day-to-day activities, if we're here at the temple, or we don't get to preach as much to outsiders, but even just with devotees, we share with one another. We reveal our minds. As Rupa Goswami says, oh, I'm reading this about, you know, in the nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction, this point was made, and it's really interesting, etc. So whatever we read, we share amongst ourselves, because, you know, we talk, we're social beings. So whatever that comes out of our mouths should be Krishna. And that does not make us fanatical. That, you know, God is just always about Krishna. Okay, Krishna is God. Can't we talk about anything else? But if you don't talk about Krishna, what are you going to talk about? Ourselves. And that is bad, because then that puts all the attention on this little universe. So we should share, even if it's with one another, practically every day, whatever you're reading, share with your housemate. We can do that anytime, every single day. Someone doesn't come to class, oh, class was about this, and that. You share with them. Not only do you help ourselves, but you also help others. We see how much did I retain in class. Right? And then we share with others, and then we go and we read again, oh, this class was about this, was about that. So just share Krishna, give Krishna. And it's good, because then that will stop prajalpa, unnecessary talking, which is like the croaking of a frog inviting death. So if we always talk about Krishna, there will be no prajalpa. Yes? Sorry? Pious. What does pious mean? I'll look in the translation and then elaborate from that. So in this verse, piety is explained to anything connected with Krishna, you'll be seen as being pious. This verse is it. Supreme Ritual Punyam. So basically, in context of this verse, sometimes we hear people, you know, will read that someone is pious, they have they're intelligent, that's a sign of piety, or they have a beautiful form, that's a sign of piety in terms of our karma. Piety in terms of our karma. But in this verse that's explaining the absolute truth, explaining Krishna, piety means that which will actually just connect us closer to the absolute source of everything. So any activity, like the verse today is saying, if we stick to the transcendental knowledge and understanding of Krishna, we increase our piety. So we increase our benefit, or we increase our how do you say in English?
Advancement.
Yeah, spiritual advancement. So the more you're connected to Krishna, the more pious you are. In a transcendental sense, not in a karmic way, like, oh, you're going to get this and that, but your activities are more linked or glued to Krishna directly. In this sense, piety is used. Your whole existence is pious. Mahatma Prabhu.
Which is more important? Strong faith or more pious features?
Pious features. For example?
Or a strong faith in Krishna.
Oh, it begins with faith. You have faith that your car will actually move when you get in and drive. You have faith that the sun will rise, or that your paycheck will come at the end of the month. So faith in spiritual life is also there, and that faith in Krishna is increased when we hear and chant. Because otherwise, if we're not hearing about Krishna, if we're not hearing how Krishna is as a person, how he deals with people, why would we want to worship him? So when we hear about him, like, oh, Krishna, you know, takes care of his devotees and he maintains them materially and spiritually, well, maybe I should serve Krishna and try and surrender to Krishna. And the more you hear about Krishna, how Krishna is a person, he has feelings too. So if you do things that Krishna likes certain things, he doesn't like certain things. If you have a certain relationship with Krishna, Krishna does say that I will take care of you. And the more you hear about that, the more your faith, you know, becomes thick. So faith is highly essential. We've placed our faith in so many things before, and right now we can put our faith in Krishna as well, because he's never let us down. He said he'll be with us in every species of life, and he's never let us down. He's never left. Just one example. In so many things, Krishna has given his word and he's still continuing. So our faith is increased by our shravanam and our kirtanam.
So what you say, strong faith is very important. Krishna will always look after us.
Yeah.
In whatever situation we are, he will always take care of the devotee.
Through thick and thin, Krishna says he will take care.
Yeah.
And he whatever you don't have, whatever you're lacking, Krishna tries and provides for that. And whatever bhakti you've given him, or whatever bhakti you've tried to perform, Krishna never forgets that. So there's no loss at all, as Bhagavad Gita explains. There's no loss in accepting Krishna as the Supreme. If there's no commentary question, I'll end there. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Shri Anitai Guru.